This is 307 Net Info, connecting community. This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and this morning I'm joined by Meg Scales. Meg, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, nice to see you. And I'm talking to you today because you're one of the co-organisers of the Johnson County Fire Relief Fund, which is a fund which is being set up to for people in our community and beyond to donate to support recovery efforts from the house door fire, which, hard to believe, is less than 4 weeks ago. It seems like a long time ago. I'm sure maybe for you, it doesn't seem quite the same as maybe for those of us who weren't directly involved or impacted right at the get-go. But can you tell me a little bit about the fund and why you set it up? I believe you set it up with Cassie Camino, a coordinator, because you were both impacted personally by the fire.
Yeah, so Cassie and I were witness to fire firsthand. I had livestock, we have cattle out there. Cassie's family's property was impacted by the fire. And more importantly, our friends and our neighbors were deeply impacted. And so as we got to the back half of the trauma and started to really take into account like everything that was going on, we realized how critical it was going to be to support our friends and our neighbors, especially those who had been on the front line with us. Like, you know, we had people that helped evacuate our cattle. And if we hadn't had them, we would have lost everything. And so Cassie and I both, in the conversations that we had with our friends and neighbors, realized very quickly how much support they were getting and how overwhelmed they were. And so we started to have this conversation. We're like, hey, what can we do to create an efficient system that really is in service to producers? And so that was really where all of this the origination was for the relief fund. In the process of that, we then quickly realized that in order to support these producers, there was going to need to be a vehicle to be able to for donations to be received and to be done in an efficient and equitable process. And so that's where the relief fund ended up, the origination is.
I think it's worth saying, you know, how our community truly came together. And I was at a number of briefings and meetings where the response of individuals, some of our volunteer firefighters, but also just regular individuals who knew that there was impact and just got out there and were incredibly courageous, but also active over a long period of time, fighting the fire and preserving structures. And we didn't lose a significant property and we didn't lose life, but the impact is still very intense for those producers. And it's seems to be about 60 different entities, 60 different stakeholders, as you say, who have been impacted, which in our community, our size is a big tranche.
Yeah,
that is a large number. So there was a lot of talk and a lot of people wanted to help. And there was some of that people wanted to donate to the actual firefighting efforts and so on. But a lot of people also now want to contribute in some way or other to supporting recovery effort. We are now in a recovery phase and money is one way to do that.
Yes.
Summit Church are organizing, they're coordinating people who can't or don't want to give money. And that's a separate conversation, but this is for donations in monetary form. How was the fund set up and why did you choose to do it this way?
That's a great question. I think Cassie and I both immediately, we were like, okay, what do we have to do? We can take cash or checks directly.
Yeah, Venmo me.
Yeah, Venmo. And as we started to have those conversations, you realized pretty quickly that you can get yourself into a lot of trouble from being a vehicle privately, both financially, like from a tax perspective, but also just the liability. And so we started to have these conversations and then we started to look into like, okay, what kind of vehicles are there? I have a little bit of background in fundraising. And so 501c3 made a ton of sense to me. And so I started researching what opportunities were out there. There were several 501c3s that were set up to help with some immediate needs. In particular, there was one for fencing. And in the course of conversation, if you're listening to this, you may or may not know, like 501c3s are a legal entity and they have specific charters and they have specific board members. And so there is a whole process and it's even more carefully managed, I think, because of the kind of scams that can go on and whatnot, right? So we ended up going and looking out towards a 501c3 vehicle that could fit into a charter that would serve the producers in the mid to long range with cash donations that can be made specifically for specific projects. Think like redoing haystacks, redoing bridges, helping with fencing that's not covered by government, these types of things, and pasture management, trucking, etc. So we ended up looking into a 501c3, and in the course of conversation, again, God bless Johnson County, everybody's like on the phone talking to each other, and the Johnson County Community Foundation, which was set up last year for it was mostly for housing here in Buffalo, which we all know is a whole nother conversation, but a thing that is needs to be addressed. And so we ended up talking to that community foundation. They were very eager and willing to utilize that vehicle. It had not been touched in any capacity. And so we've been able to help blaze the path for the community foundation and setting up all of the infrastructure for the 501c3. And also in the course of this, we also now have a vehicle where we can receive cash donations from private entities, corporate entities, et cetera, grants, which is going to be a huge thing for us, match funds. And then we'll be able to distribute those specifically in a cash donation form for very specific projects related to the recovery efforts.
So I'm gleaning a couple of things from what you're saying. One is that people can feel sure that their money is going to be securely taken.
Correct.
And distributed in a, we can talk about distribution in a moment, but it is, you know, within a safe.
It's in a safe vehicle.
A safe vehicle, that there is the maximum amount of tax relief that they could get. It is not, they're not large administration or management fees being skimmed off the top, which you do get with some of these other.
And you know that it's going directly to Johnson County producers, which has always been huge for me. It's like not going into this black hole with like lobbying efforts.
Exactly.
It's going to your neighbors.
You mentioned that there are various other recovery funding streams, and they're multiple and complex, and they cover everything from fencing to invasive species and so on and so forth. But they don't seem, they seem very cumbersome to work. They may take a long time to actually be paid out to producers or those applicants for that. And also they don't seem on the whole to make you whole. They give you 50% or 75% or 80%. You still have a shortfall. So do you see this fund as sort of filling in the gaps where those other federal or other local funding streams may go to producers?
Yes, I think it will certainly help with the gap that all of us will inevitably experience around that. And also, I think a lot of these unknowns, because this is an unprecedented event that has happened in our community. And even talking to firefighters, they're like, we've never seen a fire like this. We've never seen a fire move this fast. There was a outfit from Michigan that was told several ranchers that. And so it's going to be an interesting process. And it's going to require the community to get to come together and to identify how we make sure not only that we're helping our neighbors, but we're also setting up a process and an infrastructure to support our economy here in Johnson County. I mean, you and I were talking before we clicked play here that or record here that there will not be a single person in Johnson County that does not feel this indirectly. And I think all of us are going to feel this in some capacity. And so how we make sure that we're setting up not only to help our neighbors, but also to ensure that our economy is, we have a great opportunity in front of us to do things really right, but it's going to require money to make sure that that happens.
You were right in the center. You were one of those individuals, one of those families and producers who were directly impacted. Could you describe from your perspective how this ripples out, how you see all those things impacting people who maybe have no connection, who live in town, who have no connection, they think, with your community?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit, if you will, the example would be just around the hunting industry. There are that portion of the county is very popular for deer and antelope and even some elk. And so we're already seeing the effects of, I mean, there's like some places where there are no animals anymore. There are some places where there are still animals. And as of now, from what I've gathered in the it was probably about 4 or 5 days ago, that the hunting is still available out there, but there are a lot of hunts getting canceled or rebooked for future years.
And so you can... So you've lost, let's say you leased...
Yeah, yours.
Your property, you know, you had hunting leases. You've lost the income from that.
Correct.
Those outfitters are not coming, so yep. They've lost out. All the attendant people who kind of serviced that out.
Yeah, think like meal prep. Yeah.
All those things.
Airbnbs, et cetera. You can also think like even just local economy-wise.
The restaurants.
The restaurants, the sporting goods stores.
The grocery store that they would have bought.
The hotels. And these are all places where folks like you that are listening are employed or you frequent. And I mean, it's already a struggle. We already saw a season where we had a lot of tourists that came through, but not a lot of dollars spent. And so imagine that being squeezed even further. I mean, it's really spooky to think about what that impact could look like. I mean, I hope that we can get creative and find some ways to work around this. But I think everyone should recognize, like, this is not just a this year thing. This is not just a 2025 thing. We should expect the impacts of this to be into 2027, maybe even 2028. And again, we're poised we're in a position, like, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Like, I know that sounds crass, but we're in a position to do some really wonderful things in Johnson County and show the world, like, why we're such a special community. And so this is where the relief fund and the volunteers around that can help. And certainly all of you listening.
So what are the immediate challenges that are presented to those people like yourself who were either leasing or had their own land that was impacted by fire itself? What are the things you're struggling with today?
Okay, so I think we're through the immediate crisis, if you will. So cattle have been gathered, identified. There was not a lot of loss, thankfully. There were some injuries and some sickness. Those were all treated. And now it's really about looking forward. So you can really think about this in sort of different buckets or timeframes. So basically between now and when, let's say, the first snow flies, there's going to be a ton of fall work that's going to be going on. But you have to consider there are lost corrals. There's lost pasture. A lot of people would hold their cattle over. Now they're going to have to ship them. They have contracts, for instance, on weights. And so there were even some cattle that were being weighed, some calves being weighed before the fire, and they've lost weight since the fire, and they have contracts. And you're bound by those contracts and you'll lose money. So there's like all of these implications for immediate fall work. You also have perimeter fencing, which, I mean, I won't get too into it here, but there are some dynamics. If you want government funding, you cannot prop up or remove fence until it's been inspected. And it's going to be a 6 to 8 week process to even get a fence up if you want to be cost shared on some of that fencing. And there are some great community members that are stepping in and helping with some of that.
And we are talking about hundreds of miles.
We are saying, like, just a round number, I think you can look at around 600 miles.
Yes.
Miles.
Miles of fencing.
It's a lot. And you can bet a mile of fence is going to cost anywhere from, let's say, a cheap mile fence is $13,000. I think you're looking more at like $17,000 to $20,000, $18,000, somewhere in there for a mile of fence. And we've got 600 of those. So then that brings me to my next point, which is like in the more, so that immediate term of fall work, and then I think into spring, we're going to be really focused on fencing, trying to secure those perimeter fences so that cattle and sheep aren't commingling across neighbors, that pastures are being utilized. I mean, there's a reason why fences exist, and it really is to be good stewards of the land, rotate pastures, utilize water and feed when it's available, depending on what stage of, you know, the grass is in and what wildlife are in the area at different times. Like, there's a whole process these ranchers have spent multi-generations developing so that they can be good stewards to the land and to the wildlife. And so there's going to be like a whole recalibration that's happening with all this. So fencing is critical in order to neighbor well and steward well, and also to tend to your animals, have good animal husbandry. And so fencing is going to be critical. Now, the issue that I think that's keep, we asked a question on the relief fund back to producers, what's the thing that's keeping you most up at night? And there were a couple common answers. One was the welfare of other neighbors. I think that speaks to Johnson County's values. I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. Like half of us started crying in the meeting when we were seeing this consistent beam. The other is labor for fencing. So it's not even the materials or the cost sharing that's going to be coming from potentially from the government. It truly is, will we have enough bodies here in Johnson County to put 600 miles of fence back up so we can remain good stewards to the land, so we can be good animal husband, have good animal husbandry, and so that we can ensure that we're being good neighbors. And so there is going to be this interesting critical juncture that happens between now and, let's say, spring, and certainly through spring and next fall, but the more immediate needs of fall and winter work and through calving and lambing, that's going to be critical. And then I think we can look like on a longer scope with a timeline as we hit April through July. This is traditionally when grass gets, for lack of a better term, tight, and you're also calving and lambing. That's a peak period for those ranchers, particularly in that area. And so we're going to be calving and lambing in different pastures that we've never done before. So you have to consider all of the consequences and the unknowns that are going to be affiliated with that, again, in service to the land and to the animals and to your neighbors. And then you also have to consider like feeding, because grass, you know, we're a cool season grass community. That grass does not traditionally come up until May. And even then, a lot of these burn areas, we're not going to want to graze it, and you know, for some period of time. And there's, again, I won't get into it, and this is a highly complicated process, but there's going to be a lot of complicated factors that come into how to make sure that you're being a good rancher in regards to that period between April to July. And then moving forward in a longer term, you know, you look forward from July through probably, you know, 2 to 3 years out, it really becomes a matter of how you ensure you are working in that spirit of good husbandry and good steward to the land. And there are so many unknowns affiliated with that. We can consider like all the invasive weed species that are going to pop up, the cheatgrass, because I mean, cheatgrass is really prolific, and God forbid we had cheatgrass only in Johnson County, like it would absolutely shatter our economy, and plenty of other weeds and such as well. Anyway, I'm speaking in circles now.
Well, having painted that picture of the kind of challenges that lay ahead, how is this fund going to step in, and what can it do to support all those different complex
issues? That's a great question. So this fund is really intended to support the producers and those other Johnson County businesses that are directly impacted, I think, namely like outfitters, people that live off of the land out there. And so we're going to be hyper-focused in the next month on garnering as much information as we can around this specific impact. So understanding exactly the nuances of each operation, and we've set up a producer advocacy committee. So we have fellow ranchers that are contacting those that were affected and helping make those interpretations for this relief fund, at which point then this relief fund will be, we've set up a board of community members that will distribute those funds on a project by project basis. Now, independent of that, we also are working closely with other grants and other private organizations through identifying those needs to understand and help distribute funds and different sorts of vehicles, if you will. And so it's going to be it's just going to be really important for us to garner that need first and all those individual nuances in the operation. And then we can go to work. The really fun thing about this relief fund the creative thing about this relief fund is that we understand donations are critical, and like, not only are they helpful just for the producers, they're also helpful in processing trauma. I mean, many of us, I'm sure, have felt very helpless in this process. Maybe I shouldn't put words into people's mouth, but I certainly have. And so a big reason for Cassie and me to put this together was so people could feel that they were helping their neighbors where and how they could. But the cool thing about that is those dollars, if we're able to understand and really grasp what those needs are, those dollars can actually be used essentially as like the basis of a snowball that's rolling down a hill. And we're going to be going out and reaching out to grants, to private match funds, and other organizations that are looking to make impact to communities like ours, whether that is through steward of the land kind of aspect, if you're thinking like wildlife and that type of impact, if you're thinking about like the animal impact, the livestock impact, or just local business and economy impact. And so there's going to be a lot of match funds that we're going to be able to chase after, and we're very ambitious that this could be significant, but we need to have some of those initial funds in order to be able to go out and to make matches.
So do you have an objective? Do you have a dollar sum?
I wish I did. ask me again in a month.
Okay.
Because I think it really does come down to this need. Nobody in this county wants to just raise money to raise money, right? And milk the system dry. I mean, if we're not raising money for those that were impacted, like, we should be raising them for schools or sporting programs, you know, for other community activities. And so I think that that is, once we understand the need, we'll be able to gauge what the community can contribute. And then we're really, like I said, we're really going to chase after those match funds.
So how are you going to ensure that there's some kind of equitable distribution? Because there are so many different potential avenues that you can, you know, if you are eligible, that you can draw money from. And, you know, if it's just that, how are you going to make sure that you relatively fairly, and as much as it's possible to be fair in a circumstance like this, that there is some kind of equal distribution of some sort?
Yeah, I think the best way to put it is this isn't going to be it will not be equal for all, but it will be as equitable as possible. And so there is a group of four of us that sit on this board that are close in our different facets of life that have direct impact with these folks. And so we're essentially going to go through and identify those needs and consider, exhaust all of the options that are out there. And then where we know that there are no other options, those will be put into a pool for this relief fund, at which point there will be a stringent, we will be organizing like an application and needs process that will be, I mean, that's just the charter of a 501c3. Like, you have to do that. And so we don't have that developed yet, but that's part of it's like the snake eating its tail, right? Like, you can't do it until you actually have need identified.
So your unique position of sort of being somebody who's impacted could also potentially be a conflict of interest. How are you going to kind of navigate those?
That's a great question. That's part of why I put my hat in the ring, because my husband and I stand to gain nothing when it comes to any kind of funds from this relief fund. We had cattle out there. We were unfortunate. Like, we were subleasing some property. We didn't lose any cattle. We had no injured cattle. We had to pay, you know, we basically had to scramble to find a month's worth of feed because we had planned to pull them out in a month. So we're in a position where we aren't directly impacted. Now, there could be potential conflict of interest in the sense that, like, we have relationships with folks. And so I think that's part of the reason why this board has been developed, because there's a banker, an extension agent, a sheep producer, and a cattle producer that sit on this. And so we'll be able to help funnel all this through. And we also have this volunteer committee and the Communities Foundation that are going to hold all of us accountable to it. And the Communities Foundation will be the one that does the final sign off on any kind of funds.
So when do you envisage you sort of start to put money out? You've already been gathering some money in, I assume.
Yeah, we've raised about $25,000 already. Again, just through folks that I think just have like more passive approach. We'll start campaigns the plan is in October to start more active campaigns. There have already been a couple different community events that have funnels in.
Yes.
Yep. And so we'll continue to identify like specific campaigns that are related. Our hope is that we can marry specific stories of producer needs and have, like, for instance, we just had a conversation with a producer this morning about they have some fall shipping needs, and we can say that their corrals it's going to cost $16,000, and they have an immediate timeline, you know, to in the next 3 weeks that this needs to get done. And so while this fund isn't going to be able to move, you know, quickly enough for that, we have another fund that we've identified where they can get some relief. But that's a specific example where we'll be able to go to the community and say, okay, we're going to rally around this specific project for this specific person and help with that.
What I've heard multiple times is that if you need a new corral, you need a new fence, whatever it is, you know, you may well be able to get that in place, but they're going to want to be paid right away. They're not prepared to say, you know, oh, yeah, no, it's fine. You know, wait till next year and you've got yourself sorted out again. So those bills need to be paid right.
Right.
And that can create a shortfall and a strain, a financial.
It can. Yep. And so we are just having those conversations this week with producers about what their fall needs are. So far, the only one that we've talked to about anybody that isn't going to fit within the government specifications of the short term projects, not the fencing, would be this immediate corral need. And then labor is the other one. There's a lot of people that are paying out of pocket for labor. And again, hopefully I can speak to this a little bit more in the next week or two. But I think we've identified a specific fund that can help with those that are independent of the relief fund on some of these.
So if people have been listening to this and they understand more, or they wanted to donate to a fund to help fire relief, fire recovery efforts. What do they do? How do they donate? And what are you looking for?
Yes, perfect. So we, if you are internet savvy, which if you're listening to this, I'm guessing you probably have, you're a little...
And I will make it very easy by putting a direct link straight to the fund.
So we have a website, Johnson County Fire Relief Fund. That's the easiest place to go in and get the information. You can also, that's where you can donate online. We have PayPal. It's a secure, and it's approved charity. So it will all go directly into a bank account that's been set up by the faculty.
Can you use a credit card?
You can. Yeah. You can use a credit card. You can use Venmo. We were laughing about that. Any of those types of deals. Now, let's say you, you're local or you're not real comfortable with online. You can drop a check off at First Northern Bank, made out to Johnson County Fire Relief Fund. That's where the 501c3 account is set up. If you are more of a mailer, you like snail mail and you want to spend the stamp, or you're from outside of the community, you can send it to Johns County Fire Relief Fund at P.O. Box 41, Buffalo, Wyoming, 82834. And we've gotten checks actually from all across the country, which is just goes to show how much people love Johnson County and our far-reaching impacts. Those are the three easiest ways. Also, we'll continue to update on our Facebook page and on our website with any community activities that are ongoing that would be contributing back to the fund. There will be ample opportunities for people to contribute through their partner organizations in the community.
Thank you very much for explaining the fund, what it's for, why people can feel assured that it's going to a good cause and that their money is not being diluted in any way. That is an issue that, and nor is it being defrauded.
That
unfortunately,
is.
It's it a is. Sad thing that we have to bear that in mind. I'm struck at just one question before we wrap up. There's a very strong image, which is I've seen associated with the fund. Can you explain where that came from?
Yeah, so though, for those of you that are listening, if you do get a chance to jump on our website, you can see it. It is a picture of a dad and a daughter. I'm probably going to start to get choked up. Standing on the horizon, looking out at their family's homesteaded land that was at least, I think it was 60% consumed by flame. So that's the Stevens. That was Andy and Paisley and Heidi Stevens. She's long. She took that photo. She said it was very serendipitous. She just happened to be out there. They were checking the corrals and looking for hot spots. And dad put his arm around daughter and was looking out. And she just captured the moment. And we all knew that we needed to capture that because this is far-reaching, multi-generational. And
I think it encapsulates a lot of the impact in that it's a very striking image and it will be featured on this post. But it really does bring home the scale of what happened and what it really did for some people.
It was a really emotional 48 hours. It continues to be emotional, but it was so amazing how it brought out the good in people. And it was unbelievable to see people step up for each other and how neighboring in the West is supposed to be done. The heartbeat of Johnson County. And at the same time, it just rips your heart out of your chest to see people struggle and suffer and have been through this trauma and like watch with tired eyes over the land and also with hopeful eyes that we can recover, we will recover from this and that we hopefully can recover even stronger.
And I think that's especially underscored by so much national conversation of division at the moment and how we seem to have lost our way to be able to even converse.
That is not true in Johnson County. And I work with people across the country, frankly, even across the world. And as they questioned me about what was going on and they were concerned about our well-being, I had many people, even men, that would start crying on the phone just hearing about how our community was coming together. They were like, this is the hope that we needed, like to hear that that humans want to help each other, that there is that capacity in ourselves. And just, I think it underscores again how special Johnson County is. We're lucky. I'm also tentative to tell people the story because I don't want them to know about Johnson County too. Our secret.
Well, like, thank you very much for explaining the fund and what it's for and why it matters. And I just encourage people to, you know, make whatever contribution you feel you're able to. And if you feel you can't make a cash donation, then Summit Church are coordinating in-kind donations where you can actually use your hands or your time.
And on our website, we're also, because we don't just see ourselves as a donation vehicle, we see ourselves in service to producers in Johnson County. We do have a list of ways that you can provide in-kind support. And whether you have technical skills related to ranching or you don't, there is a need out there for bodies. And we have that information on the website as well about how you can get involved, even if you can't donate from cash perspective.
Well, thank you very much indeed. And I wish you well. And I hope the fund is plentiful and there's enough for us to go around.
Thank you for being a vehicle to have this conversation today.
Of course. Thank you.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.